Hi, everybody. This is Jason, and I'm here with Chris.
Hello. Right?
And welcome to the very first House of Mojo podcast.
Yay.
Now, it's all about insecticide. Now, something I should probably point out is that this is actually not the first attempt at an insecticide podcast that Chris and I made, is it?
No, not at all.
The first attempt ended pretty much how you'd expect any Mojo-related project to go. There were many hilarious catastrophes and fiery explosions, and many small children were killed. And worst of all, the audio was unusable. So here we are again. We'll just call this Insecticide Podcast Take 2, because calling it Take 17 would be kind of embarrassing. I guess I should start with a quick recap on insecticide in case anyone listening hasn't happened to read Mojo in the past year and a half, which is, I think, how long the game's been kind of publicly known. Insecticide is a story-driven action-adventure game, the first title from Crackpot Entertainment, which is the kind of latest studio in the group we might call the illegitimate offspring of LucasArts. The first one was Tim Schafer's Double Fine Productions, then there was Autumn Moon, and then Telltale, and now we have Crackpot. And even though Insecticide might not fall under the traditional definition of an adventure game, it's very much in the spirit of the old LucasArts adventure games, kind of for the same reason Psychonauts is, even though it's technically a platformer. It's got the same attention to the characters and the writing and the story, and, you know, for that reason it kind of makes it worth covering on Mojo. And also, of course, because the team that made it is comprised of many people who worked on the old LucasArts adventure games. In fact, one of the project leaders was the co-project leader of Curse of Monkey Island and the art director. So the game is comprised of, structurally, it's 18, I think 18 missions, half of which are what they call the action levels, which are like the kind of simplistic shooter platformer stuff where you run around, you jump on platforms, and you kind of have like a small arsenal of weapons that you shoot people with. And the other half are called the detective missions, and these are essentially miniature graphic adventure games complete with inventory and puzzle solving and talking to characters through dialogue trees and all that good stuff. The DS version of Insecticide was released this past March, in North America anyway, and the PC version...
We're still waiting for it.
Yeah, and the PC version is in the process of being released as a series of two downloadable parts. They're calling it Bisodic, the first episode of which was released, I guess, a couple of weeks ago now, right?
Yep. I think about 3 weeks ago now.
Yeah, and the second episode is due to be released. Well, we don't have a date on it yet, but it's supposedly sometime soon.
Sometime and summer, I think. That's what it says at the end of the first part.
And hopefully that will be followed by a retail release as well. So, anyway, when I announced this podcast a couple of weeks ago on Mojo, I invited readers to write comments kind of with discussion topics or questions they might have about the game that we could talk about here. And I'm looking at the post right now, and I'm delighted to find that all five of Mojo's readers left a comment. So I guess what we're going to kind of do is kind of go through each of the comments and kind of use them as a springboard for me and Chris to just talk about Insecticide, I guess, until we're fed up with it. So first we have Cap'n Nacho. But by the way, everyone who left a comment, just prepare for me to fail spectacularly at pronouncing your names. He has a bunch of things to say. He basically wants to know, though, he wants to know the improvements present in the PC version. Now, Chris, last time we attempted this, I told you that I hadn't played the PC version yet, and I still haven't.
Oh,
but
God!
But I actually caved in and bought it recently, but I'm having trouble running the game for
really?
Some reason. So I'm trying to get that sorted out, but you're still the only person who can answer this. So
okay.
Let us know about the PC version.
Sure. Okay, let's just consult my notes here. As I remember it from podcast number one all those years ago.
Yes.
The first obvious one is the graphics. I mean, we're not supposed to care about that sort of thing, but it does make a massive amount of difference. And especially with the DS version being so foggy, you can't really see.
Yeah, it's got a pretty limited draw distance.
Yeah. By upping the graphics, removing all the fog, the city really comes alive. You look far off into the distance, you see cars going, as you jump out the buildings, you see cars going past below you. and the animation's much better. Actually move their mouths when they talk, that sort of thing. And it really adds to the presence of the game. Of course, there's voice acting all the way through, which is a big bonus because it's done very well. LucasArts, Telltale, Double Fine quality. They seem to have a knack for them for all the LucasArts offspring.
Yeah, I agree with that on the basis of the cutscenes.
Yeah. They're also the only tiny bit in the DS version in the cutscenes. Right. But this is everywhere.
Correct.
Which is a big plus point. More cutscenes, of course. Mm-hmm. Plus as well. Ones that were just simple text-based ones with like a photo of like an old SNES game type of thing. And are now fully animated cutscenes and all very, very well animated. The cutscenes are a little bit low quality, but I don't mind that really.
You mean they're heavily compressed?
Yeah, they do look it. It's not that horrible. If I do the planned video version of this podcast, it's going to be far, far less good quality. But it is noticeable to people who really, really care about high definition video. If you don't, you won't notice. I can't remember who pointed out on the forum. Doders? Maybe? I think he did anyway. Controls.
Don't recall.
I'll check in a minute while I speak. Controls are obviously a big plus point, and that can segue nicely into our discussion about the DS version and the problems with it. The controls are spot on perfect with the PC version. Mostly mouse controlled. ASDW, O movement, and space for jump. Left mouse button fire. That's the action bits. It's and the adventure bits. The adventure bits are strange for people who like adventure games. Strangely enough. Because they're not fully mouse-driven, as you'd expect.
Well, they're not, but... Well, the way it works in the DS version, and I assume it works similarly in the PC version, is that you do control those direct control. You move Chris around in the 3D environment, but whenever you come up to something interactive, like a character or an item, you kind of press A or click the mouse, I assume, and it cuts to kind of a still picture of them. I mean, and then it turns into point-and-click. I mean, it's not like... full-fledged regular adventure games haven't done things like that before anyway.
Yeah, it's not a downside. It's just it might surprise people who haven't played the DS version and are expecting the adventure sections to be proper point and click mouse cursor on the screen. But yeah, you move up to an object. Sorry.
they still do have the point and click mechanic though. I mean.
Yeah. Move up to an examinable object or person and click space bar. And it comes up with a sort of point-and-click style screen with the inventory and that. There's a lot more to look at as well. A lot more to examine and see, like, pointless little stuff, which just earns a nice little quip, like proper adventure game should.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which I'm obsessive with.
Well, I guess... Just to kind of summarize, because I know one of the big questions people have is, what's the main difference between the DS and the PC version? The DS version is basically the PC version, just with all the limitations brought upon it by being on the DS. I mean, there's full voice acting in the PC version, whereas in the DS version, there's only voice acting in the cutscenes.
Yeah.
The PC version has all the cutscenes, whereas the DS version has as many of them that they could fit, and the rest are kind of changed into little slideshow versions of it.
Yeah.
And, of course, the controls are a lot better, and the graphics are a lot better in the PC version. And I think it's... You know, Chris, I ranted about this endlessly during our last one. It's that I don't understand why they even bothered to make a DS version. And this is coming from someone for whom, you know, the DS is probably still my favorite of all the current platforms, mainly due to the huge library of games on it and the diverse games on it. But, I mean, I don't understand what the advantage was to anybody of having this game on the DS. To me, if you're going to port Insecticide to one other system outside the PC, it would be the Wii. I mean,
yeah,
it's a perfect fit in like every way. the PC version of the game is hardly high-end. I mean, anybody could probably run it on their computer, except for me, but I don't, that has nothing to do with the, has nothing to do with the requirements. It's something else. But, you know, it's not a game that exactly taxes your video card, but it's nonetheless a great-looking game because it's got a great style, and the environments have a lot of wonderful detail and gags, and it just needs the breathing room that the DS can't give it. You know, just because, and the Wii would have been fine. You know, it's not a matter of the port being shoddy. I think, to me, playing the DS version, it really looks like they did everything they could. But it's just, fundamentally, it wasn't an appropriate platform to put it on. Just as kind of a general rule of thumb, you don't port a real-time 3D game to the DS. Not that it can't be done. You look at Metroid Prime Hunters or something, but that was built from the ground up. I'm just still completely confused.
Well, so is this, technically. But...
Well,
I've had to think about this.
Wasn't originally? I think PC was its original platform, and then the DS version somehow like beat it in the development cycle.
Well, the original idea was the PSP.
Really?
That was their original platform. Then they talked to GameCock about it, and they pointed out that no one actually owns a PSP, and so they went with the DS instead because that's obviously the more popular one.
But you're talking about with the handheld. Like, of the handhelds, they chose DS over PSP.
Yeah.
But it wasn't always supposed to be a PC game?
Well, I think they always planned to do the PC game as well.
Yeah.
But for the console, they chose the handheld for some strange reason.
The DS obviously has, like, a huge install base. I mean, I guess I can kind of see the incentive there, but, I mean, it just...
And if we're talking, when they had the discussion with GameCock, I'm not sure exactly what date that would be, but I could imagine that being before the Wii came out.
Yeah. This game was announced, let me think, early 2007?
That was announced, remember?
Yeah, early 2007.
I could bet they actually talked with GameCock, and before the Wii was obviously so popular.
Yeah. But, you know, looking at it now, I mean, it's ridiculous how perfect a fit it would have been for that system. And, you know, graphics aren't everything and all that, but when you talk about a story-driven game, stuff like the cutscenes and the spoken dialogue, those are big deals. Those aren't just, you know, that's not just like frosting or bells and whistles. I mean, can you imagine playing, like, The Curse of Monkey Island or Grim Fandango, a version in which some of the cutscenes are missing and there's no in-game spoken dialogue? I mean, the voice acting in this game, and just like those games, is awesome. And
some people might prefer Monkey Island 3 without voice dialogue, though.
Maybe, but, yeah. I mean, whether or not they like the voice of Guybrush compared to the one they invented in their head in the early 90s, no, I don't think anybody can question that.
At the time, maybe.
The voice acting, the quality of the voice acting is excellent. And Insecticide definitely kind of carries that tradition of high-quality voice work. And it's sadly missed. I mean, it really is. I don't consider that to be, like, kind of an extra disposable feature. I mean, the story, as told through the cutscenes, is kind of important. And I think,
Just going back to my previous argument about the... saying they did have the discussion before the Wii was so popular, and the DS was popular... Yeah. Why didn't they make it for the PS2? I mean, it's not as good a quality. Doesn't have the pointer, basically. Mm-hmm. But if they were going to do the PSP, and they want one that's more popular, and that everyone owns, why not think about the PS2?
Well, you know, I don't know.
maybe they're worried that by the time they finish, the PS2 wouldn't be around. Superseded by the PS3.
The Wii just would have been so perfect. It's just such a perfect fit. I mean, from a control standpoint, it might have been even better than the PC version, which I can imagine is probably pretty great, at least infinitely better than the DS version. But I mean, you know, with the Wii, you've obviously got the pointer for the shooting stuff and the inventory dragging stuff, but you've also got the nunchuck joystick for the direct control, which the game, of course, is, whereas with the PC, you have to use the keyboard. Which, I mean, you know, it's not like that's exactly an unfathomable thing, but I'm just saying, it really just seems like this game was made for the Wii, and it's just, like, astonishing that it's not on it.
Yeah, it's been out 2 years now. If not, no, it's 2.5 years, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
The Wii we're talking about.
Yes. So yeah, my summary on that topic is that if there's the PC version is the only version to get of this game. I mean, there's really no question, unless for some reason you don't have a computer.
Well,
and
I can only think of two positive reasons to get the DS version or the PC version. One, you can take it wherever you go.
Obviously, yeah.
Obviously, at least you can take it to the beach or whatever, and it's a, like a LucasArts style game on the DS, right. Which doesn't apart from obviously porting Scum MVM to the DS via that complicated method.
Well, it's true. Quality story game, you know, it's always good to see that on a console where it's not prevalent, but I guess that's really true of every platform. I mean, every platform could use a good story game, you know.
True, but there's obviously, like, Psychonauts is on, say, Xbox and PS2,
right.
But DS didn't really have any, apart from perhaps like a LucasArts-style fun one, unless you include, like, Lego Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Did Ankh ever come out on the DS?
I don't recall. I want to say I heard something about it, but I don't remember what happened with that. I wasn't really into Ankh that much.
I was okay. It was, yeah. Obviously, it wasn't as good as LucasArts could do, and it was probably much, much better in the original German. They didn't put the effort into making the English version as good, as far as I could
tell.
Well,
I think jokes always get something lost in translation.
Yeah,
but you know.
Yeah.
I enjoyed Ankh. Don't get me wrong, but. I haven't been actively researching its ports.
Well, no, I just had a look today, and I just suddenly remembered, wait a minute, wasn't that supposed to come out on the DS at some point? And it never did. I think it's like end of last year it's supposed to have come out. And there's still pages for it at Amazon and things like that.
Right. Now, the one thing...
Wait.
Go ahead.
My other point, which I never mentioned, is that it's the full game.
Right, that's true. Yeah. It does have all the missions, whereas, let's see, I said there were 18 missions, right? I think the DS version, I mean the PC Episode 1, gives you the first 8 missions. You said it ended where you beat the giant robot spider?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where the PC version ends. And I guess when I played, I replayed the DS game in preparation for this. I haven't played it since it first came out. But, When I play it, that mission does seem like the most logical place to kind of end an episode on, if you have to have an episode. But, you know, I
think they intended it the way that
you think
shows.
So? Because
just a giant robot spider as an obvious boss. It just
Not only does it work as kind of a climactic boss, but the story also is kind of at a decent area where you can, you know, when I was looking at how the cutscene ended for that case, it did seem kind of like a. Like an act had ended, you know.
Yeah.
And another one was about to start up, but you know, I really don't understand the logic behind making this a episodic release. I mean, if it, because the story is not built episodically. I mean, it's just one big game with one big story, and with made up of 18 cases, and the PC version gives you the first 8. You know, basically gives you the first half of the game. But I don't understand. I don't understand what they were thinking when they split this in half. I mean, is it beneficial to them? Because if it is, fine, but I don't see how anyone really wins in that situation. What do you think?
Well, I've had a check, because I've sent off a few more questions to Larry O'Hearn and Mike Levine for lots of an updated part 2 to the interview. Mm-hmm. And one of the questions I've asked them... And
available exclusively on Mojo.
Ah, yes. What a brilliant voiceover voice you've got. Yeah, what was I saying?
Second part of the interview.
Yes. Yes. One of the questions I asked them is obviously, why did you split it into two? But I'd gone over a few other interviews, and the general idea that I got was that they simply didn't want the downloads to be so big. So they
really?
Wanted, so they want... Because it's about 600 and 700 megabytes. I mean, it's not much.
Yeah, but I mean,
people
you
with,
know.
I mean, it's quite... Well, that just...
We live in a time where downloading something that's several gigs is the norm. I mean, heck, you go download Psychonauts from a digital distribution outlet, it's several gigs, and, you know, that's just accepted at this point. But, I mean, whatever. I mean, as long as there was a reason in somebody's head.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the only thing flaw I can think of with that idea is that why isn't the game finished first? And then...
Was...
Actually, the part two finished first, and then reached part one, and then maybe wait a few weeks, do a bit of bug testing with the second one, and then release that, so it's not too far apart.
But that's the thing. If it's not far apart, if it really is coming out in the summer, relatively, I'm guessing a few months at the most, right? That's my speculation. But I mean, that's still pretty close. And if it's going to be released that close, why not just, put them both together and release it as one big game?
Or two part download, if they're worried about actual old space, so you can do it separately. But I don't know. Oh, we'll find them.
Guess. But even though I couldn't play the PC version, I did check out the manual, which is really fun, by the way.
I haven't checked that, actually.
Yeah, there's a PDF of the full scanned manual, and I noticed that in the installation instructions, they talk about putting the DVD into your disk drive. So hopefully that's a clue or a leak or whatever you want to call it, that a retail version is coming soon.
I hope so.
And look, it's not like the downloadable versions are ripping you off or anything. They're $14.99 each, which, combines to a $29.99 game, which is totally normal. I was just kind of curious as to what the rationale was, and I'm interested in hearing what they have to say when they answer your questions for the interview.
Cool. I hope so. Hope they remember us and not too offended by this podcast.
Next up, we got Cavanacho has more to say. Sorry. He wants to know this. This is for you, Chris. I'm particularly interested in any expansion in the game's story or atmosphere. One thing that bothered me particularly strongly about the DS game is that Chris's team is introduced early in the game and characterized through puzzles that relate to them, but then completely disappear. Is there more to them in the PC version? Well, I know the answer to that, but you go ahead and say it.
Well, you can talk to them more in that opening scene with them. I'm at the police station.
Wait, you mean there's more lines of dialogue, or
a bit more, not much more, to be fair. And they do sort of disappear after that again. The storyline is the same,
right?
And that would be a downside.
Yeah, basically the one of the earlier cases of the game, Chris is introduced to. We're introduced to Chris's kind of a. Partners at the police station, as it were.
Not mine, the in-game character.
Right. And, these characters are kind of interesting, but they never really show up again later in the game, and that's what Cabanacho was lamenting. But, I don't think they come into play. Like I said, the content of the missions is pretty much identical in both versions, so...
It's a shame, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fun to talk to them the first time, though.
Yeah.
All right, next comment is from Haggis.
I can't remember his name.
What's that?
The guy who does poetry. He's
Dave
great.
Grossman?
In the game. There's one cop who does always reports in poetical or language.
The large purple guy?
Yeah, that him. Yeah, that's great.
I'm about to go to the official site. But I'm not. Alright, next comment was by Haggis. Yes. His questions are, is it fun? Is it worth the money? Are the action sequences frustrating? Is the story on par with the great adventure games from the days of yore? Well, the answers to the first two, I'd say, are yes.
Yes.
Are the action sequences frustrating? That's a little bit trickier. I think it kind of depends on your inclination towards action gameplay in general. I mean, if you're one of those adventure gamers who, want to stab your eyes out with an ice pick every time you see an action sequence, you're obviously, this game isn't going to change your mind. But there's nothing, outrageous or difficult about the action sequences. I mean, I guess they could be frustrating, but...
I can't see how.
Yeah, to the game's credit, though, I mean, when you fall off something, it respawns you, pretty much right where you failed, and, you have infinite lives, so it's pretty forgiving. I mean, I think it was kind of the point, kind of for the same reason that the adventure sections, the puzzles are not insane. Anybody could play this game. The puzzle design for the graphic adventure sections remind me a lot of Telltale's puzzles in that, there's a decent amount of logic behind them. Also, since the adventure missions are so self-contained, you're unlikely to kind of just give up because you're overwhelmed. It's usually kind of one puzzle at a time. You do this, you do that. And in the same sense, the action sections, it's just very simplistic platforming shooter stuff. You know, I thought they were fun, and yeah. You know, it kind of brings me to what I think makes Insecticide so special, and makes it better than the reviewers have suggested, is that it's kind of like an adventure game that lets you do the stuff that adventure games don't let you do. You know, adventure games are always about the puzzle solving and the detective work and the talking to people and doing the mundane stuff, which is obviously great. That's one of the attractions to the genre. But I think one of the flaws of some adventure games, specifically the bad ones, is that you're usually doing all the boring stuff, but then when something exciting happens in the story, like, you know, a car chase happens, that's when the cutscene takes over. You know, heaven forbid, you know, because adventure games, you're not allowed to do any of that stuff. You've got to do the safe, peaceful stuff, but whenever something actually happens, that's when the kind of the steering wheel is taken away from you and the story takes over. What Insecticide does is it has all those great things you want from an adventure game. It has the fun characters and the great writing, and it does have those cool down moments where you solve puzzles and figure things out, and everything is allowed to kind of advance deliberately. But when something interesting happens in the story, when it's time to chase down a suspect, it lets you chase down a suspect, you know? It doesn't just say, you know, because this is an adventure game, you know, you're simply not allowed to take part in that. No, I mean, you get to go and run chase suspects, and since it's not insane, since it doesn't require amazing reflexes, and it you know, none of the missions are so long that they kind of outstay their welcome should you get frustrated with the mechanics of it, I think it brings a good variety and a good balance. Yeah. So,
I mean, of course, the other way around is true. I mean, shooters like, say, Max Payne,
right?
And you're in the shooter all the time. You don't get a chance to, say, chat with your or friends at the police station when you're going around there, really.
Right, you can see it as... Well, go ahead.
Yeah, not much of a conversation. Anyway, you can, like, press E, and they say a pre-recorded line, but you can't respond back to them.
Right, you could call it an adventure game that's not afraid to shy away. I mean, you know, that doesn't shy away from action elements, but or you could call it an action game that's willing to take some time and, you know, deal with the story. But what's great about this game is that it's story driven, and
yes,
you know, therefore meets my definition of an adventure game. But you know, it's obvious that when the designers sat down, when Larry and Mike, who I presume created the idea for it, it's not like they sat down and said, okay, I want to make a shooter/adventure game. You know, I want to make a game where there are missions where you shoot people and missions where you solve stuff. No, they came up with this story, this concept of this film noir type world inhabited by insects, and they said, what's the best gameplay to serve this IP, to serve this concept? And they decided, okay, well, there should be some stuff where you do detective work, like in any detective story that influenced this game, and you should do some running, gunning, and jumping stuff, which, you know, which takes after, like, you know, chase scenes for movies like that. And so the bottom line is that this game is all about the story. It's all about, you know, everything is in service of the story. The gameplay is in service of the story, rather than the other way around. And that's where I think the reviewers kind of dropped the ball. I think it deserves more praise than the reviewers have given it. Instead, the reviewers just say, yeah, you know, the characters are kind of amusing, but I don't like the control, 6 out of 10. And, you know, the game goes on to go into the budget bin a week later, and no one buys it, and the end. And I just think it deserves more than that. I think Insecticide is a game that deserves to be discovered.
Well,
and I think,
just checking out Diders on the forum. IGN have actually given quite a good review of the PC version.
Yeah, they gave one of the better ones.
Yeah, 7.5.
Mm-hmm.
I think, yeah, that's fair enough.
Especially since it was just the first episode and only half the game.
Yeah.
I kind of get one of the reasons I wanted to do this podcast, the reason the very first Mojo podcast is about Insecticide, of all things, is that I get the sense that it doesn't have the, there isn't a lot
commitment.
Of interest. Yeah, there's a lot of, I mean, not that people downright hate the game, but I sense a lot of apathy towards it, probably because they just don't know the things that they should know, and, you know, the review, you know, I can understand that the kind of mixture of views that the game has got is kind of making people a little less likely to maybe give the game a chance, and we're here to tell you that you need to play this game. You know, if you consider yourself a fan of the old LucasArts graphic adventure games, you need to play this. It's pretty much got the same things that made those games great.
Well, I think one of the reasons it's not getting as much attention as, say, Double Fine's games or Telltale is it just hasn't had as much exposure, I don't think. I mean, Telltale and Double Fine were, like, talking about Psychonauts or Bone or Sam and Max for ages, and we were all getting excited about them. But I think, Sector Cycle just appeared.
Yeah, and I think also, you know, Sam Max. We all know what Sam Max is. We were already following it before it even existed. You know, we were, you know, for a whole year, people were just saying, you know, when are you making a Sam Max game? When they didn't even have the license, so there was already that interest there. And you know, with Double Fine, it's kind of a similar thing. No, Psychonauts isn't a well-known franchise; it's brand new. But Tim Schafer's name was enough to sell
it. It's the same with Ron Gilbert and Deathspank, isn't it?
Right. You know, we can just trust based on the fact that those guys are working on it. That it's going to be great. And I think maybe some people, not as many people, know who Mike Levine and Larry are, you know, even though they probably should. And, you know, there are a lot of big name LucasArts names on this. For example, Peter Stegel, I think his name is. I definitely pronounced that wrong. Anyway, he...
chose the hardest one to pronounce of all the many.
He's responsible for the cutscene work in this game, like the animation, and it really shows. For those of you who don't know, he was the lead artist on Grim Fandango, and he did a bunch of other stuff, and he's also, I believe, currently the lead animator at Telltale Games. So, and you know, Dave Grossman and Justin Chin were apparently involved early on in the process of making this game before they ever joined Telltale, and you know, obviously Larry has done a lot of animation work and artwork on old LucasArts adventure games, and if you just go to Moby Games and look up Mike Levine, you'll see, you know, how many games he's credited on from LucasArts back in the day. And there's tons of others. If you read Chris's first interview with Larry and Mike, you'll see. They list a bunch of the LucasArts folks who worked on this.
I'm just having a look at it now.
You might want to look that up.
Of course, there's Peter Chan as well.
Mm-hmm. Right, he did the concept art, environment concept art for the game. He did concept art for all of Tim's games back at LucasArts, and also Psychonauts. And I assume Brutal Legend too.
Assume so. Yeah. We don't know, obviously. But
obviously. Peter McConnell, who did the music again. He did the music for all of Tim's games, and the music here is great. By the way, it kind of reminds me of a mixture between if I have to explain it in terms of things you're already familiar with, which I don't always like doing, but I'll just say it's kind of a mixture between Grim Fandango and Psychonauts, or Day of the Tentacle, in the sense that...
He's got his own sort of style, hasn't he?
Right. It's got that kind of film noir aspect to it that might recall Grim Fandango, but it's also got that kind of Day of the Tentacle, Psychonauts wackiness to it. So it's kind of like a wacky noir. The soundtrack's great. Just play the game.
He's got sort of a jazzy style, really, doesn't he, Peter?
Yeah. Music's definitely a strong point.
If you listen to, like, Stan's theme in Escape from Monkey Island, which he composed and did in the first place, Monkey Island 2. Very jazzy in the Grim Fandango style.
Well, that was a version of Go Tell Aunt Rhody, right? But yeah, he put his own jazzy spin to it. It's great. Yeah. It's familiar enough, but it's not so familiar that it feels like he's ripping off his own work. It's just a really good soundtrack. There are live instruments there. I think if you check IGN, they put up like two or three of the tunes in the game. You should check that out probably. And I would like to see a soundtrack for this game.
I think Zara put them up a while ago, actually. I can't remember from the DS version.
Maybe so.
Anyway, we were talking about why it's not getting as much exposure as it did, as it should. Especially in the main gaming press. I fear for the same sort of thing with A Vampire Story, really. That's more of a safe bet for us. That's why we're looking forward to it more.
Well, it's a safe bet for us, but is it a safe bet for them? Like, one of the things I notice about A Vampire Story, to compare it to Psychonauts, to compare it to Double Fine's projects, or Crackpot's projects, or even Telltale's projects, it's very much a traditional adventure game. They're just saying, we're partying it like it's 1997, 2D backgrounds, you know, it's going to look exactly like Curse of Monkey Island, which is obviously great. It's obviously something people like us are totally into.
Yeah.
But I'm definitely interested in seeing how well it performs. But on the other hand, you know, it's being released in Germany. Germany buys that, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not too worried, I don't think.
That's what I mean. It's all the safe bet for the adventure game fan. That's why Insecticide, coming from such an event, enter game orientated team,
right,
people aren't quite looking forward to it as much.
Yeah, something the reviewers have suggested is that it's not going to please action fans because it's got too much adventure stuff, and it's not going to please adventure fans because it's got too much action stuff. Well, I disagree. It depends on what, you know, you want to see in an adventure game. And to me, Insecticide has all the things I want to see in an adventure game. It's got a storyline that's as good as any of the old LucasArts ones, which is, by the way, that was Haggis's last question. He wanted to know if the story was on par with the great adventure games in the days of yore. And I'd say, yeah, it's very much the kind of thing you would expect to see if LucasArts had developed this game. What was the plot of the story? The Nectarola Factory, which is the kind of soft drink corporation that runs the town, there's a murder there, and Chris and her detective partner, Rochi Carruthers, who's kind of the stereotypical grizzled old veteran, they have to go investigate it, and, you know, a tangled web of crime unfolds, and the story unfolds, and I don't want to give anything away, but it's very fun, and there's a lot of fun characters and fun writing in there, and I don't think anybody would be disappointed with it.
Yeah, it's very much a spoof of the film noir style.
Right.
Oh, and it just tells it in such a fun way, you can't not love it. Possibly the only criticism I have of it is that it tells it a bit too quickly and doesn't get quite into the depth, but
maybe the PC version handles it better, but of course you played the PC version. But on the other hand, the second episode comes out, and I think having all the cutscenes as they were originally intended to play, I think that will help a lot.
Because it does a lot.
Yeah, the DS version, some of the cutscenes that are changed into just like text accompanied by pictures. Excuse me. I just think the cutscenes will work a lot better in their original form to kind of help the pacing of the story. You get the information in a more fluid way than just like, you know, here's a picture, next mission.
Yeah, it does work much better. That was one of the things that annoyed me about the DS version. Near the end, and there's a massive gap in the storyline. 1 minute it's one of the slideshow cutscenes where you're being shouted at by your boss, and then suddenly Chris is in a dark tunnel underneath the Nectarota Corporation saying, "My investigation led me here."
Is that the scene where she's fired and she decides to continue on her own account? Well,
I'd like to see the actual investigation part, what the pieces that led to there directly.
I don't remember that part specifically, so I'd have to replay it, but...
I
don't know.
They might be explained in the game. It might come up better playing through the PC version.
Maybe so. By the way, this is going back to the DS version, but we made the point that the DS version really doesn't have anything exclusive to offer over the PC version, unless you count the use of a touchscreen or whatever. But, you know, that's handled on the PC version and better, so you're not really getting anything in the DS version. However, back before the game was released, official sources were saying that there was supposed to be an exclusive multiplayer mode for the DS version. Whatever happened to that?
Well, that's another one that I'm asking Mike and Larry.
Maybe it was a misunderstanding or something, I don't know.
I'm not sure whether that was announced, or whether that was just a mishearing, or they just didn't have time, or couldn't think of a way to do it.
Yeah.
But, by the way, I don't know if that would be an exclusive to the DS or not.
All right, next comment by Ascoval. Definitely pronouncing that wrong. Okay, I would like to know, when is the second episode due, and how does the divide between the two exactly work? Is there actually any story or gameplay-related reason to treat them as separate entities? Well, yeah, we already answered this one. The answer is no. There really isn't any story or gameplay-related reason.
And we've got no idea of when it's coming out.
As to how the divide works, basically you get the first 8 of the 18 missions. It gives you a little less than half the missions, but the cutoff point is definitely the most appropriate in terms of the story.
Because
you have that boss fight, and, you know, the story kind of starts a new act, so... I mean, don't get me wrong, when you finish episode 1, you know, it's gonna leave you hanging, but it was probably the best place to end it, I think.
Yeah, if they have to do it. Yeah, I think that works.
Okay, Ditas has this to say. Definitely pronounced that wrong as well. the game uses the adventure genre and the action genre as narrative devices to tell a story. This concept looks to be more important than any deep game design involved with each action and adventure element, which could appear shallow. I think this is the thing you have to accept to like the game. The whole is more important than its single parts. I agree. Great comment. That's, again, something that I think the reviewers have failed to kind of mention. They're too busy complaining about the fact that they didn't want action elements in their adventure game, or they didn't want adventure elements in their action game, that they didn't stop to think that maybe the game is innovative for what it tries to do. You know, it's not innovative in the sense that the individual aspects are all that revolutionary. I mean, the graphic adventure stuff is intentionally standard and familiar and easy to use. You know, there's nothing special about the adventure sections. They're just really well done adventure sections. Kind of similar with the action sections. You know, it doesn't innovate the action genre. You've got jumping on platforms and shooting stuff. But the way the game kind of effortlessly throws these two together and says, you know, we're doing this kind of gameplay because that's what the story says we should be doing at this point, that's innovative to me.
Yeah.
Letting the story dictate what goes on, to me that's an innovation, and that's something worth praising.
Yeah.
And I think the reviewers failed to do that big time.
I can't think of any other game that does that sort of thing.
Right, you could say...
And you could say that do adventure games nowadays innovate? Grim Fandango, well, apart from being... Yeah, okay, that's a bad example.
Very bad example.
Okay, the last episode of Sam and Max, is that any different from Secret of Monkey Island, or Maniac Mansion, even?
I think Telltale is actually a really great example of this discussion, because what they have done, whereas Crackpot and Double Fine have said, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to take the adventure genre and kind of evolve it into something else. We'll keep the story-driven sensibilities, but we'll kind of do different kinds of gameplay. You know, Psychonauts was kind of about what would happen if an adventure game, a LucasArts adventure game, met a Mario-Zelda hybrid, and Psychonauts was kind of the result of that. You know, and Brutal Legend, again, he's kind of morphing the story genre into different gameplay. What Telltale did, and I think it's just as good what Telltale did, they said, okay, we're going to keep the traditional adventure game, but we're going to scale it back to the bone. We're gonna have a very, very simplistic interface, and we're just gonna make the games about what they were always really about, namely the writing and the characters and the storyline. And I think that's what makes Telltale's games so successful, is that they didn't try to make it all complicated. They didn't try to, whereas most modern adventure games, most of which, let's admit, are total failures. I mean, adventure genre has to have the biggest, more bad games to good game ratio. But a lot of modern games, I think they try too hard to be like the other ones. They say, you know, Monkey Island was great because it had verbs, or it had this, and because it was 2D, and because it had, you know, the same pause icon. But what Telltale says is, we're just gonna strip that all down. You know, point and click is going to do everything. We're going to have, you know, the puzzles are still going to be there, but it's not going to be about the puzzles. It's just going to be about the stuff that actually matters. And I think that's what makes Telltale so successful compared to other, maybe, adventure game developers.
Yeah.
It kind of got back to the core of what it was about. I think the genre is getting muddled, and, you know, it was kind of losing sight of what really made it good in the first place. And the result is, like, missed clones where everything is dull and totally uninteresting, and the puzzles are all of the gear variety, and it's like Telltale's just like, look, it's about the characters, it's about logical fun puzzles, it's about, you know, good writing, and they just made it specifically about that, and nothing else gets in the way. You know,
yeah.
there's nothing, anyone could play Sam and Max, there's no learning curve to speak of.
Yeah, I mean, just think about other adventure games. I mean, I've just tried to play one for called Art of Murder, FBI Confidential, for some bizarre reason.
Sounds and like it, a game I would never play.
No,
ever.
No, not at all. It's obviously a CSI ripoff, but it's just a good example of how it's a traditional adventure game. It's all 3D, it's all point and click, and it's rubbish. Voice acting's terrible. Oh, the storyline never gets gripping. You hate the characters, and it's just a perfect example of how hard it is to do an adventure game.
Well, I think people, you know, they try to replicate the wrong things. They're so desperate to kind of recapture the magic of Monkey Island. They say, what made that game great? And what they come up with is the interface and whether it was 2D or 3D and stupid stuff like that. But, I mean, when you replay Monkey Island, yes, you have a nostalgic attachment to the primitive, you know, interface and stuff and the way the inventory is, shows up on your screen and all that stuff. But, I mean, what really made the game good was the world and the characters and the atmosphere. And that's what actually made those games good. And that's what modern adventure games fail to capture. Yeah. You know, Insecticide, Psychonauts, games like that capture that much better than most modern adventure games do.
Yes.
Because even though they aren't carrying over the same kind of maybe mechanic that those 15-year-old games did, they retained what actually mattered about them, what actually made them good.
Mm. And it's the same with action games, to flip it to the other side of the Insecticide. I mean, say the two Max Payne games, aims as an example off the top of my head, Max Payne 2 is identical to Max Payne 1 in every way, or even more recent, say Gears of War, or looking at all the videos for Gears of War 2, it's kind of the same graphics engine, same gameplay. Yeah. Pretty much.
I mean, it's going to be a great. Yeah. It's going to be you're right, Halo. I mean, it's going to be a great game. I'm going to buy that game. But
oh, yeah.
I mean, let's not pretend like it's covering
innovative.
Any new ground.
Yeah.
I mean, take a look at Halo 3. I mean, that game got a 9.5 everywhere just because it was supposed to get a 9.5. Not that it's not a great game. I mean, it's a very solid game. It has everything you could want from a Halo sequel. But I don't think anybody could objectively say that game is a 9.5.
I think it's actually less innovative than Halo 2, because it feels like it's replaying Halo 1 a lot of times.
But my point is that a score that high implies that it's doing that it's special, that it's unique, that it's doing something different, and it's not. Whereas a game like Insecticide, in which the reviewers are suddenly totally harsh to, you know, they seem to forget the fact that it's a first-time developer, had a very limited budget, it's trying to do something different. Suddenly, they become really harsh critics. Mm-hmm. Suddenly, the same people who claim that too many people are buying licensed games and big games and, you know, we're the reason the industry is not being innovative or creative because we're not buying these games. Well, these same people, when it comes time that a game needs their support, suddenly they're all too happy to pick up the flaws. And that's what really pissed me off about Insecticide reviews. Not that it's a perfect game by any means, but it's a game, like I said, it deserved to be found. It deserved, you know, the reviewers should have let the audience of that game know what was good about it and what was special about it. And they just failed to do that. And, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, very, very frustrating when you see something like that.
I mean, you can use the same innovative reviewers against innovation comment against Alone in the Dark as a recent example. Hold on, I'm just playing through. That's a very, very innovative game. They screwed it up massively, and Insecticide is far easier to play than it. But I do admire it for actually trying something new.
Right.
But a lot of reviewers just focus on the fact that it's really, really annoying and frustrating, and you can die very easily, and it's rubbish.
Now we're talking about Alone in the Dark.
We're talking about Alone in the Dark there.
Okay.
Insecticide.
I haven't played that game, so I'm just assuming you're right about it.
Then you compare it to Insecticide, talking to someone who's played both of them, and Insecticide is so much fun to play, mm-hmm. So and it's so easy to play, even on the DS, that's where it can get a little bit screwy to start off with, but...
I mean, I enjoy the DS version. I just can't recommend it to anybody when the PC version is out, you know. I mean, it's so much better in every way.
I mean, I'm happy to have both. because I like playing games on my DS and I like being able to take them on holiday with me or whatever.
Well, I'm happy to support the developer.
Yes.
But, you know,
as well.
People, you mojoers, should know that, you know, you don't need to buy this game for some sort of obligation, you know. This is just a good game. It really is.
Yeah. It's not like RTX Red Rock or anything like that.
Or Star. Don't go there. Okay.
Or Fracture.
Yeah, I don't know about Fracture. But I was never going to buy it anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Want to try the demo.
Okay. Next comment. Well, last comment, actually. It's by Jail. This is kind of a... goes with something we were talking about earlier. He wants to know what could have their marketing done better to get this game more exposure or better press. what would you guys have done if you were marketing this game? Well, I don't know the first thing about marketing, and I don't really feel like it's a responsibility of mine since I'm not paying it, being paid for it like real marketers are. But I'll say this. The game failed to...
market itself.
Well the GameCock really failed to kind of get information out to the people who needed it. Like, I can remember back on the DS version coming out, there were plenty of, like, flash advertisements and stuff all over websites. So, I mean, I guess it'd be unfair to say that they didn't try. And plus, you know, a game like this is never going to be able to make a dent amidst all the big games that, you know, it's just impossible for a game like this to get noticed. But what's unforgivable from my perspective is the people who are actually interested in this game from the beginning and go out of their way to find information about it, if they can't find information about it, that's a problem. Okay, we didn't know that the PC version was even released until it was released. You know, we were never really
given
a release
date.
It's
the same with the DS version, you remember? Yeah. That was being released every few days, as far as I could tell. There's a new release date.
And it's not a matter of the game getting delayed. I mean, that happens in every game, but it just kind of showed up, and we didn't know. And, you know, So my comment would just be, they should have just been more accurate with their dates and their information, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, we still don't know for sure that a retail version is coming out. We have to conclude that based on evidence. You know, it's an adventure game in itself. Trying to figure out the
that is another
strategy
question
for this
I will
game.
Ask them. I will ask them that. Don't worry.
Well, I'm sure Crackpot only had so much.
Yeah, I don't think they had anything to do with the game slipping so much. I think that was mostly GameCock. Or maybe maybe in the stores.
Well, they have nothing to do with the marketing, I'm sure.
Yeah. Apart from talking to us.
Yeah. But, I mean, you can blame them a little bit. They, you know, the marketing takes some blame, but I also blame the reviewers a lot. And I also just blame people who just refuse to take a risk on a game that looks good. Because it's new and because it's not, you know, this game part 7, you know. It's hardly a new thing. I mean, it's the same fucking problem that every original game faces, I guess.
Yeah. Psychonauts Beyond Good and Evil.
Psychonauts apparently had a decent shelf life though. Shelf life, I suppose.
Well, digital. It's online now. Also, of course, anyone can buy it.
Supposedly, it does very well in those channels.
I can actually go into my town now, local shops. I was going to put this up on the forums, some pictures I've taken. I can find copies of Sam and Max Hit the Road, The Dig, Full Throttle, Day of the Tentacle, and Grim Fandango. But
fuck,
I cannot,
you guys. You know, Europe always had those games. Europe always had those games available.
not until recently. They just suddenly appeared.
Well, they keep getting them re-released because Activision actually cares about those games, whereas LucasArts doesn't. The country those games are developed in, you can't buy them here.
But I cannot find a copy of Psychonauts.
Really?
Anyway.
Well, that game's been out of print physically for a while. I mean, but it's readily available from GameCat, from Steam, from a bunch of stuff, and, of course...
Why don't they release it online?
And you can.
So that's an off-topic entirely, but
it is online. It is online.
No, I mean LucasArts.
Oh yeah.
Even if they don't do anything else, why don't?
I could devote a whole podcast to that.
Oh
but, yeah.
God. Yeah. Oh, carry on. Yeah.
Also, Psychonauts is a, you know, being backwards compatible in the 360 helps, and you can buy it on the Xbox Live Store or whatever it's actually called. Psychonauts is still, I think, doing some business, which is good.
That's why maybe Brutal Legend's going to come out on the PC, because just looking how consoles disappear.
We'll see.
And the PC version's so much easier to find, but I bet it will. I bet it will.
I'd really love to see it on the PC, but I'm not holding my breath. I'm still remembering those Psychonauts PC sales numbers, and they were pretty weep-worthy. But we'll see. You know, I intend to get a 360 soon enough anyway, so, you know... I'm willing to buy a system just for a Shaver game. I almost did that with the Xbox before the PC version was released at the last minute. Yeah, the game was in development for almost 5 years, so I was like, okay, I'm gonna get Xbox as soon as this game comes out. And of course,
are you going on about
delayed.
Bloody?
I kept putting it off.
You're going on about damn US game stores having the LucasArts games, and we never got Psychonauts for months afterwards. So if there hadn't been a PC version, I wouldn't have played it until about a year later.
It's always importing, come on.
Yeah, but yeah, it wouldn't work on my Xbox.
Yeah, but the apathy, or maybe the downright hostility of LucasArts towards its back catalog, is, I think that's worth a podcast on its own.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, we'll stop with that now. And yeah, that's a good idea, actually, yeah.
And we had the last comment.
Just shout for about half an hour.
That was the last of the innumerable comments that were left for us about Insecticide. So, any other topics you want to talk about?
Things that could have been done better in the game. I mean,
yeah.
I guess we could,
now that we've been praising it, I guess it's time to criticize it.
Yeah, the main one that I can think of is a bit petty, but I'd just like to see more of it.
Yeah, more of the world.
Yeah, more of the world, more maybe larger adventure gaming environments.
It says something good about the game, that the world leaves you wanting more when you turn it off, you know.
Yes.
It's a really nice, it's a good place. I really love all the little gags on the billboards around the town and stuff. The game has some fun environments, and it goes a long way.
But yeah, it could, I hope there's like an Insecticide 2. I mean, I don't know if they'll be able to, but
I hope Crackpot does another game, that's what I hope.
Yes.
I hope they get to do another game, because I don't think the DS version sold well. And I can't imagine the PC version doing any better, considering three people know it exists. But, you know, it's one of those games that if it does well, it does well in the long term. So, time will tell, I think.
Well, it's on Steam now. That's a good start. I hope it'll turn up in the Telltale store at some point. I mean, that would be like perfect marriage of...
Yeah, it really would. Telltale used to have those third-party games up. They used to sell Alamo and Ankh. Ankh, whatever, how you pronounce that. I don't pronounce things good. Anyway, Insecticide would be a perfect fit for that.
We've got to talk about what influenced it and what styles it was like, because people were like comparing it to Psychonauts.
That kind of frustrates me, because I think what that does is it kind of cheapens the originality of both of the game's art styles, because Psychonauts, I think, has a really original art style. But of course, as soon as it came out, everybody was like, it's like a Tim Burton game. If Tim Burton made a video game, this is what it would look like. And that kind of pissed me off a little bit, because it's like heaven forbid you give the art directors, the art team at the company credit, because I think they made a very original type game, and it's the thing's repeating itself with Insecticide. I think that's a good-looking, fairly original art style, but people are comparing it to Psychonauts, I guess, because there's nothing else to compare it to.
Yeah,
it's kind of a sad commentary on a game art style.
It's a LucasArts game, fellow stablemate, so of course people are going to compare it.
Yeah,
but I think it's closer to Beyond Good and Evil. I mentioned that game slightly earlier on.
Great, great game.
And just in the sort of style, more action and sort of the greeny, very grimy world. Oh, slightly post-apocalyptic, but
that's another game with a well-realized world. I'm really looking forward to the sequel.
Yes, but I think that's more the clue. I compare it more to Beyond Good and Evil.
Just comparing it to anything, I guess.
Yes, that's true. But it's still nothing like it. I mean, I'll compare Beyond Good and Evil to Zelda more than anything.
And that's what needs to be said. You know, there's really nothing like it. You know, it's to me, it's kind of a sad commentary on game art styles in general, that they're in general so bland that whenever a game comes along that's actually creative, it can only be compared to the latest creative game. So it's like, you know, Insecticide is the next Psychonauts. And it's like, you know, but I guess there's no other way to do it. That's the only way to get people interested.
Yeah. What it basically is, it's a third-person shoot-em-up and an adventure game with a really good story, good cast, and original setting.
Yeah, that's something that needs to be said, in case you guys haven't figured it out yet, is that the game does not attempt to meld adventure game gameplay into some other kind of gameplay, like maybe Psychonauts does. What it does is it says, these are the action missions. This is the adventure mission. You know, they're separate. And I think it works. A lot of reviewers didn't, but I think it works.
I do. That annoys me, saying, oh, it doesn't meld together very well. I mean, fuck off. Probably.
It's like they're criticizing the game for not being what they wanted it to be.
Yeah, I mean, being slightly different. Racists.
But let's see, my criticism. I guess it's my turn to criticize the game. I guess, and this is coming from someone who's only played the DS version, though I have seen videos of the PC version, and I've been very impressed by them. But, yeah.
You're trying to play it, yeah.
My issue is that I found the in-game special effects to be kind of bad. Like, the cutscene work is excellent. The cutscene animation and stuff is absolutely fantastic. But, like, the in-game animation and the in-game effects kind of, I thought, were kind of poor. I don't know if that's better in the PC version. But I can remember, just to give one example, it feels a little glitchy. Like, there's one example I can think of where you're in a warehouse in one of the action levels, and they have those two robot bugs, and there's a bunch of crates hanging over them, and there's a control panel you have to hit that makes the crates drop on them. Well, when you hit the control panel and the crates drop, that's it. Like, they just kind of disappear. Like, there's no, like, nothing. The crates fall on them, and they're gone. I also found, and again, this might be something that was polished
it's,
in the
it's
PC
much better,
version.
Yeah, PC version.
The,
without.
There's a mission where you have to destroy all the sewers with histamines. They have, like, these sewers where all the robots keep coming out until you destroy the actual sewer. And the DS version was really picky about it. Like, sometimes the first time I do it, it blows up correctly. But other times I have to do it 5 times before the game decides I've actually blown up the sewer. And sometimes I'll just get killed, and sometimes I won't by the explosion. You know?
Yeah.
And that was kind of frustrating.
It's much easier to do in the PC version. But
and
that's the only bit that I didn't really understand, why you had to specifically blow them up with histamines.
But I guess if I was quibbling, I would say that
that's a real quibble.
The in-game sound work is definitely no match for the background music. It feels like it was made by two different companies. it just feels like, you know, the gameplay stuff was made by different people than, like, the story stuff, I'd say. Like, the people who wrote the story and did the cutscenes and did all that stuff, they don't... It seems like it was a different team than the people who did, like, the coding, if that makes sense. And I think that's true. I think some of the stuff was outsourced. Well, technically, the entire game was outsourced. Technically, Mike and Larry, the only two people who make up Crackpot Entertainment, whereas all the LucasArts people were technically contracted.
Well, technically,
like
not
Chan
even that. I mean, yeah, Larry says that. He's technically... Well, he's technically creative director of the game. It's pretty much just Mike.
Yeah. And,
is Crackpot.
And, I think a lot of the environment and programming work was outsourced by other companies. Like, Create Studios, I believe, was one of them.
They're the FMVs, I think.
No. FMVs were Peter Stegel.
What did Crate do then?
I think they just did, like, I think they helped, like, build the environments and, like, program and stuff.
Absolutely.
I don't know. I'm totally speculating at this point. Nobody ever listened to me, okay? I don't know what I'm talking about. But, yeah.
Read our interviews. That'll get it.
But basically, it sounds like, I mean, the PC version corrects most of the problems I had with the DS.
It does. It does. The effects are much better. In general. Oh, but the animation, the only technical quibble all I have is that the lip syncing doesn't sync up very well in game.
I pointed this out last time. I think the only game I could remember there being hand drawn animation for the lip syncing for all the in game dialogue was Psychonauts. And maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm just being fooled by excellent auto lip syncing, but in that game, outside of the cutscenes, whenever Raz talks, whenever you go around and read the camp bulletin boards or you read something in the environment and you swivel that camera around to face Raz, he says it, you know? It doesn't look to me like he's just opening and closing his mouth. It looks like somebody took the time to actually animate his lips matching the words he's speaking. But, you know, that game was, of course, in development for 5 years and had, like, a ridiculous budget.
Well,
I mean, lip syncing.
Wait until you actually play it. It is noticeable. I mean, there's occasionally a pause where the mouths don't move at all.
I can accept that. I mean, in-game lip syncing, I can forgive that. It's kind of the same with Telltale. I mean, any game that has a lot of dialogue, it's hard to. I mean,
it's forgivable. It's totally forgivable, and could be sorted out with a patch.
Yeah.
Actually,
well,
quite easily.
I highly doubt they'll put the effort towards that. But I mean.
Well,
wouldn't be worth it. But yeah. I mean, you look at the Telltale games, I mean, for all, like, the kind of the big deal moments in the episode, they'll do, like, a hand-drawn animated sequence. But for the most part, the game kind of relies on a auto lip-syncing.
I think it works.
And it works fine, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm thinking of one other part that bothered me in the DS version. There's this part where you have to walk by a fan. There's like a giant fan that you could fall into if you're not careful. And obviously the first thing I did was intentionally jump into it so I could see Chris getting chopped to bits. But that didn't happen. She just fell through. Like, it wasn't there. And, you know, just little moments like that. But, you know, you gotta consider that this is an independent game. essentially, and it had a very small budget, and you know, you have to put things into perspective, and I think the game is just really good.
It doesn't correspond to
overall
your sadism. I want you to see the main character get chopped up into a
If I
pot.
Make a game and there's a goddamn huge fan on the floor and I jump into it, I mean, I think ethically speaking, I'm required to draw an appropriate animation for that. But you know, that's just
one dismemberment.
Yeah.
Speaking of frustrating technical moments in the DS version, and anyway, there's a bit with the trains, and you have to walk across the wires. That was very, very hard to do in the DS version, and if you died there, you had to start it all again. That's the only bit where it really punished you for falling off.
Yeah.
Off every other part, it respawns you just where you fell off, basically. But they couldn't do it on the wires because it's basically wire all the way.
I think overall, though,
but in the PC version, it's sorted out.
Oh, there you go. I think overall we can agree that the game is you know, the positives far outweigh the negatives. I mean,
yeah,
it could have stood to use more polish, but realistically speaking, I think it's as good a game as it could have been given what I assume were tight scheduling and budget constraints.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, if you're looking forward to a vampire story and Brutal Legend, if you've got Psychonauts and Sam and Max, or if you just happen to visit a site called International House of Mojo, you should be buying this game.
Yeah, I mean, the point of this podcast is just to remind you that, hey, this is a good game. We're not just covering it for the hell of it. We're not covering it because we're running out of things to cover. You know, we've always got LSD as our
bashing LucasArts.
We have no shortage of topics to discuss here. We're covering Insecticide for your benefit because it's a good game. You need to buy it. And if you take anything away from this,
and we're worried you're not buying it.
Buy Insecticide.
Yeah.
You hear that, Gabez?
Well, he doesn't play any games these days. Yeah. Or at all.
We got him to play Loom recently when we convinced him that it was had a lot of literature influences. And he enjoyed it, I think.
Good.
So good.
About damn time.
So, you know, we've been talking for an hour and 7 minutes by my count. And
oh, God, yeah.
I think what really we've been trying to say was that Gabez should play more games. That's really what the point of this was. I'm sorry for wasting everyone's time talking about Insecticide. This was all just an elaborate, you know, scheme. But,
and LucasArts should release their games again.
Yeah. So if you guys want us to do another podcast, give us suggestions and say so. Otherwise, if you think this is the worst thing ever and you don't want us to ever do this again, you should let us know too. But I think for now, we're done, right, Chris?
Yeah, I think so.
Awesome. Well, thanks for listening, guys, and stay tuned next time if there is a next time. Bye.
Bye.